reflects some successful results in our facility investment projects at parks by helping to reduce the cost of energy and the use of energy in our campgrounds. I would just say that our results are the backlog. Let me start this over again here. The reduction in backlog and facility repairs has really occurred at a pace faster than we had originally intended. And that's some of the reasons for that is because we have reevaluated, if you will, what the backlog was and whether we should repair buildings or take buildings or facilities or take them out of service and not use them all together. And we've looked at directing funds into the system from grants and other sources to help leverage that $15 million. As I mentioned yesterday, Benchmark 90 is the one benchmark we have in the Oregon benchmark systems, and it measures the amount of state park property per 1,000 Oregonians. In 2001, that number was 28 acres per 1,000 Oregonians, and in 1990, and that's a reduction because in 1990, that was 30 acres per Oregonian. I'm reporting this because that's what the measure is, not necessarily that is a valid or a good measure, but it is a yardstick, if you will, if nothing else. Our results in this benchmark are limited by what our budget is for acquisition, what the price of property is when we get ready to buy it, as well as we have a growing population, you know, that has an adjustment to the mathematics as well. Again, we have about four challenges, if you will, and you'll see those reflected in our performance measures. One is in the area of heritage conservation. We've relied in the past on tax reduction incentives to encourage folks to make investment in historic preservation in their properties. That incentive is losing interest. It's no longer really the incentive as it was, and that's primarily because it was based on stabilizing property taxes, and property taxes have been generally stabilized anyway, so it's not the incentive that it was when it was initially established.
And if you could, just briefly describe precisely what is that incentive.
Mr. Chairman, certainly the incentive on the heritage or on the tax incentive was that a property must be on the Register of National Register of Historic Properties, and that in exchange for that, you also must provide your restored or renovated property open at least one day a year for a tour by the general public. And then in return, you get taxes are frozen or stabilized for a 15-year period of time. And that's the program that I mentioned yesterday that was started here in Oregon in 1975, I believe. And again, our participation in that program is dropping off primarily because it isn't the incentive that it had been.
Taxes are frozen for 10 or 15 years?
15.
15 years. And is there a federal, didn't there used to be a federal investment tax credit that came along for historic properties that were listed on the Federal Register?
Chairman Krupa, I'm not certain of that. I'll find that out, but there
I
is
thought
no
there
tax.
Was for a number of years, but is it still in place?
Mr. Chairman, thank you, Hammer. There is the federal investment tax credit still alive and well.
For historic properties. Okay, very good. And that was James Hamrick from the department who was just speaking from the back of the room for the record. Thank you, James. Please continue, Mr. Chair.
Also, the fact that there's a, you know, the demographics in the state are changing as population continues to grow. There's also a growing diversity in terms of urban, rural, also diversity amongst sort of the age cohorts that in the state. Also, there are competing demands for recreation and conservation. It's really critical to begin to strike a balance between providing outdoor recreation opportunities and also protecting natural resources, and both of those elements are part of our mission statement, is to provide for the use and protect scenic, natural, cultural, historic, and recreational resources as well. And the last item that I would mention, which correlates to our 14th performance measure, is our objective to identify a method to provide some long-term stability for the financing of the department. We talked yesterday about the life of Measure 66 and its potential future as to whether it continues to provide funds to the department in, or not after 2013. But also, if that's not to be, we need to be looking at our revenue streams and make plans as to how we how the department would continue to function in the event that that went away. Page 40, just only yes.
I stand not asking this question. I mean, why do you do a performance measure on this? I mean, there's zero funds involved. And what would be your plan if the ballot measure 66 wasn't repassed?
Mr. Chair, Senator Bates, the reason that we do a performance measure on this, and we are certainly open to your thoughts on the effectiveness of this measure or how to achieve what it is that we want to achieve, but the basis of this is to keep foremost in our mind the fact that lottery funding may not be available at the end of the 2013. And so whether we make up a gap in the difference of expenditures by either reducing expenditures or increasing fees or seeking some other revenue source, potentially general fund, which used to be a part of this budget, it helps keep that in front of us. Additionally, about every 6 months, we do a 10-year projection on revenues and expenditures to keep an eye on, you know, when something might start to show up on the out years of the chart so that we can begin to plan for it. But I would also agree with you that the fact that there's no bars that occur after a couple of years on that chart would lead you to ask the very question that you asked.
Mr. Chairman, I don't do respect. I would suggest you drop it as a performance measure as a minimum. Okay, you got a potential problem looming which could go either direction, and you have to deal with the other building when you get there.
That's correct.
Mr. Chair, that is the co-chair's recommendation to the subcommittee as well.
You see how smart those co-chairs are. Yeah.
Now, doctor. All right, please continue. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this afternoon will be reporting on 13 performance measures instead of 14. again, our measures are derived from our Target 2014 and those eight strategies. Unlike many strategic plans, I'd just like to point out that Target 2014 is I've been involved in organizations where we've had strategic plans, and primarily they've set on a shelf someplace, and they've been something that, you know, the leadership referred to time and again when it was important or appropriate to refer to them. But I think that what you'll find as you talk with folks in our agency about Target 2014, I think you'll find that document is used and understood throughout the depth of the organization. And we have rangers in the field who make recommendations and managers who make decisions generally based on those eight strategies or at least try to relate their decision-making back to the eight strategies that we have laid out. So I feel real comfortable that it's a good document. It's not a, you know, it's not a document that's 3 inches thick. It's easy to read. It's generally easy to understand. And I would point out that I think it's pretty well used. I'm on page 41, if you're following, and I'm just summarizing some of these items. The questionnaire item number 4 says, how does the agency communicate performance results and for what purpose? And I would also like to point out that a link to our performance measures is on the home page of our website. As you click on you go to Oregon State Parks, and right there on the left-hand column, one of the 5 or 6 choices is to look at our performance measures and our strategic plan. Additionally, we use this terminology from Target 2014 and our performance measures as we talk about reporting performance in biennial reports that we provide to legislators and others through newsletters, through discussions with news media and so forth. So I think it's not a strategic plan that sits on the shelf someplace. It has a life, and it has an understanding in our organization, and it's used quite a bit. I think the biggest single achievement that you'll note here it's apparent, I guess, in how we've collected the information. The single biggest achievement in terms of the administration of the department over the last 2 years has been the implementation of our financial management system. A biennium or so ago, we asked for some limitation to institute a financial management system and bring our management system in line with the state's financial management system. And we have done that. It's been a good effort, and we have now a system in place that will provide us real-time information. We're able to query information from our financial database and create reports to make management decisions in relatively short time, whereas before that was a monumental task to do. So I would just suggest that that's probably a lot of the data that we have used to pull the results together in our performance measures, our financial management system has sort of been the institutional tool that we use to gather that data and that information.
And Director Wood, are you using a different system, a specialized system to Parks, or are you part of Orbitz?
Chairman Krupp, we are part of the statewide financial management system. Prior to that time, we were on a different system as a part of ODOT, in sort of our earlier life, and we were directed by the legislature to undertake this project so that our reporting system would interface with the statewide financial management system. And it's been worth it.
And do you anticipate that you'll stay within the statewide, I'm not going to use acronym here, the statewide financial management system?
Chairman Krupp, that's correct.
Okay, great. Thank you. Please continue.
So with that, I'd kind of like to launch on the discussion of our performance measures, and I would very much appreciate the feedback that you all would provide us, because in my mind, these are iterative, and we need them to serve our purposes, and we need them to serve your purposes as well in measuring our performance. So even the little discussion we had yesterday about performance measures was helpful. Again, these measures were developed so that we could gather the information using systems or information that was available within the department. So we didn't want to create a bunch of performance measures where we would go out and have to create some sort of a system to generate the data. We wanted to use the systems that we had in place. So by and large, that's the case. Our first performance measure is total investment in outdoor recreation opportunity leveraged through grants from the department. And it's easy to note, first off, that in 2003 and 2004, we were short of the target. I would say that the target is the, if for instance you would look at under the target data for 2004, the total is $13,997,539. That's the total of the dollars that we would grant out to an organization plus the value of the match that they bring to the project. So that what that represents is $13.9 million worth of projects on the ground in local communities.
Okay, now hang on a second. Say that again so that I fully understand that. If I'm hearing you correctly, you just said that this is the total of the money that ORPD grants. There, I did it. Parks and Rec grants are that go forth, and the match on the part of the grantee. Is that correct,
Mr. Chair? That's correct.
Okay, so that is the aggregated total amount then.
Correct.
All right.
That's the total value of projects on the ground.
Okay.
All right.
And
yes, Senator Mills.
When you say other entities, that means counties, cities, private entities, or?
Mr. Chair, Senator Nelson. They're governmental jurisdictions, not private entities. Cities, counties, port districts, park recreation districts.
Please.
Do you create some sort of priorities? I mean, is it, I don't know, industrial land, recreation land, open spaces or something like that? Or how do you go about doing that?
Mr. Chair, Senator Nelson, there's several different categories of grants that are involved here. There's our recreational opportunity grants. There's land and water conservation grants, all-terrain vehicle grants, trails grants. So there's a series of different types of grants that are totaled here. But generally, they all are applications that come from a local sponsor, and they are reviewed to ensure that they have a relationship to some identified recreational need in that community. They're reviewed by generally a citizen panel who reviews and evaluates all those grants. And then that panel makes a recommendation to our commission who approves them, and then we enter into an agreement with that jurisdiction to, you know, to exchange the funds and so forth.
Yes.
I mean, it's like, would you put the greatest priority then on recreational lands and maybe not open space, or is there, you know, that type of priority?
Mr. Chair, Senator Nelson, it's, the priority is really based on what the local need is, and in relationship to what the, you know, the general or the regional overall, the overall need is. But we as an agency don't establish those priorities.
That's another question. Do you, I mean, do you ever have conflicts with these local agencies? I mean, say, like, would a city and a county get crosswise, or a special district in a city and a county where they...
Mr. Chair, Senator Nelson, I don't believe that's happened. Generally, there are several jurisdictions that work together in these grant applications. And so, you know, if a city or, a city may come in conjunction with a request for funds with a, you know, with some sponsorship by a county or a park and recreation district. We have more applications than we have dollars to grant out. But what generally the way the process works is if somebody comes in and applies, we work with them in their application to be sure they address all the points so that they can be competitive. And then when all of them are considered aggregate in an aggregate, if you know, one doesn't rank high enough to on the sort of the priority list to meet the funding line, then they're provided feedback by the members of the committee and our department as to how they might work that project to make it more competitive the next time around.
I'm just trying to get a feel of how the process works.
Senator Biggs.
Just a quick question. You had a pretty big changes here in the amount of the grant money, $3 million, $12 million, $19 million, and back to $13 million. Is that when the ATV thing came on board from ODOT, or is there something else involved?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bates, the ATV committee came in, or the ATV transfer came into the department in 2000. So prior to 99-2000 biennium. So there was no ATV money reflected in that prior to that time.
That one went from 3 to 12?
Go ahead.
For the record, I'm Kylene Stone, Financial Services Manager, Oregon Parks and Recreation Department. The other thing that happened, the Land and Water Conservation Fund had actually gone to zero for several years, and it began to get funded again in 2002, I believe it was. So that was another factor that brought the amounts up. And then the other factor is that when we got the lottery funds, we started the local government grant program with lottery funds, and that happened in 2001, I think, is when you really start to see the effect of that.
The numbers just, Mr. Chair, follow up. I mean, the numbers just jump all over the place. Right? And $3 million, $3 million, $12 million, $8 million, $15 million, $12 million. You almost have grant money coming and going from all different sources. It's a little confusing, right?
Mr. Chair, Senator Bates, and I would agree with that. What this measures is when the money goes out the door from the department. And that's part of the difficulty with this performance measure. And we're going to look at, in the interim here, we're going to look at making some changes to the way we manage our program, because a lot of this money, although it's obligated, it's reimbursable. And so when the entity hasn't actually completes the work, then they bill us for it and we reimburse it. For money we control, that's pretty simple. For federal money, it's a longer process. But what happens is if we don't get the money out the door, for whatever reason in this biennium, then that money then rolls into the ending balance. And that's some of the discussion we had yesterday about the size of our ending balance. Next biennium, or in the interim, we're going to take a close look at, are there ways in this, at least in the local grant programs that we manage, that we perhaps can find ways to get the money in the hands of the local sponsors more rapidly and perhaps with less sort of administrative processing that has gone into it in the past. So I would hope to see some changes in our program that would result in some changes in the performance on this issue.
Senator Nelson?
Just going back to this, I think we talk about money. Okay, a project goes out, you give a grant, send some money, it generates some revenue. How do you handle the revenues? Does the local entity get the revenue? Do you get the revenue? How do you make it? So does it make you self-sufficient, makes them self-sufficient? What happens?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Nelson, we sign an agreement with the sponsor that it essentially says that, you know, we give you this money with these conditions, and those conditions are you'll, you know, certify that the project's been completed to those standards that it was intended to, and that you will keep it in recreational use for the public in perpetuity, or we'll talk about maybe replacing that sometime or other. And it's theirs. And so if they generate any revenue from that, that all is within their own operation. They also incur the cost for operating as well.
Sure.
If you do something, now you do something, this is a grant program, but if you don't do the grant program, you do something yourself. Do your grant programs ever get in conflict with programs that you folks are doing with your other monies? Or if you go out and do a park and create some revenue, how does that work?
Mr. Chair, Senator Nelson, there really isn't any conflict. Projects that we do, projects that the local sponsors do are really complementary in terms of meeting a recreational need. And we generally don't enter into projects for the purpose of generating revenue. It's sort of a byproduct of the services that we provide in terms of camping and day use. That's primarily our revenue driver.
Susie?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this is a measure that the co-chairs have asked that the agency look at providing a different kind of measure that gets more at the performance of the agency in the timeliness of providing the grant and making payments to the grantor on it. So it takes that fluctuation of the dollars out of the measure, because some of it you don't have much control over, but the agency's control is over how you manage that program in terms of processing the application to the award to making the payments. So we'll be looking for some.
Very good. And while we're on the subject here, you just said something that reminded me of a thought I had yesterday. I made a note of it. In talking about grants and in talking about working with local governments, do you compete with locals sometimes for certain types of grants that are out there?
Chairman Krupp, not really, and certainly not for the grant money that we manage within the department. There is a certain portion of the federal land and water conservation money which is reserved for state agencies only, and in fact we compete for that those funds against other natural resource agencies like Fish and Wildlife or I suppose potentially Marine Board, Forestry. So there's a portion of those grant funds that we might compete amongst other state agencies for, but we don't.
But not with locals, like cities or counties?
Mr. Chairman, no, we don't.
You don't? Okay.
All right, very good.
Okay, well, why don't we move on? I would suggest one thing in this particular measure that it might be helpful to the committee, and I'm just going to throw this out to the committee because we can certainly talk about it later. In round number two, but it would be helpful to me to have perhaps a separate line that denotes exactly how much ORPD, the Parks and Rec Department money grants is listed there separately from the total of the local participation added in. That way we can have a very good understanding of exactly how much you're giving out compared to how much that you bring in on a regular basis from Measure 66. It's because, frankly, the way it's now, it's an aggregate number, so it doesn't give us a clear picture of exactly how much is going out the doors with that. And I made a note of that so we can perhaps talk about that later.
Mr. Chair, in the materials that we brought today that we handed out on the second and third page, there is a breakout for fiscal year 2004, so you can see the column entitled grants is the part that our division, our department paid out, and then the column entitled match is what the local community.
And which page is that on?
It's on two and three.
On two and three. Okay, very good.
Details of fiscal year 2004 grants.
Okay. Very good. And I also noted that in part of your narrative here, and you certainly wouldn't want to read all of this, and I wouldn't want you to read all of this, but you do mention that you don't keep data currently on the time to process grants or the time it takes to. And I really would. I know Susie just addressed that, but I, that's very valuable information to us because it's one of the key performance measures that kind of broadly across state government that we're asking agencies to measure is how long is the time does it take you to serve the people that you serve? And that helps us, I think, figure out where we need to put resources, help you with taking care of backlogs and those types of situations. Please continue.
Item performance measure number two is percent of Oregonians who believe Oregon is doing a very or somewhat good job of providing parks and open spaces. And as I mentioned in my earlier remarks, this is a representation of survey data that's collected by the Oregon Progress Board. We believe it's really a reflection of customer service, the experience that users have when they come in contact with the department, whether or not facilities meet expectation in terms of cleanliness, availability, state of repair. It's also sort of a reflection of the experience that they have when they visit a park. Albeit all of those things are very difficult to measure. Some of them are more perception than they are tangible, measurable results. We do think it's a good proxy for a feel for what Oregonians think about the park system. And it's a very open-ended question. So it allows folks to bring in lots of thoughts to that. That's where the survey data come from. We also
yes, Senator Biggs.
How do you collect the data? What's the method of doing the survey?
Mr. Chair, Senator Bates, it's an extensive survey that's done by the Progress Board, and I'm not certain whether it's a written survey or telephone survey, but it's the same data that's used to update all the Oregon benchmarks. So it's a pretty extensive sample size, I believe, when they do that. I can find that out for you, but I don't know specifically whether it's a written survey or a telephone survey or and the sample size, but
also it's not a survey done in the parks themselves. It's a random survey to the public.
Mr. Chair, Senator Bates, that's correct.
Yeah.
That's correct. To get to the point about surveys in the parks, we also do that. We have comment cards that we give to all of our campers when they come, and we gather that information and use that in determining whether we're providing the good levels of service or not. Another program that we have in the department is what we call the All-Star Park Program. It establishes a set of standards for parks, and if they achieve those standards, then they're recognized for having done that. And customer service and customer satisfaction is an element of that awards program. As I mentioned, the 2004 data reflects a result of 91%, which is 1% below our target, but well within, I think there's a 7% margin of error on this survey. So our goal would be to keep it at 90% or better. If it drops below, I would also mention that we also keep a log in our department of all the emails and telephone calls and letters that come to the director's office, and we track those to find out just in total how many do we get on an annual basis and what is the nature of the complaints and where do they come from. And so, that number has been about 115 or so a year for the last 5 or so years that we've been keeping that data, And frankly, about a third of them are letters, emails, or phone calls we get with regard to compliments for work that staff has done as well.
Yes.
Thank you. I have a question regarding some of the comments in bold on page 5. You talk about you've looked at other states that have surveys online. Do we have surveys online, or do any, you know, we do reservations online? I'm wondering if we do any follow-up with people that we know how have registered online and made a reservation, following up with them with an online survey.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dingfelder, we don't, but we're going to. We've talked about this, and that's one of the things we want to expand our visitor follow-up and feedback. And that is exactly one of the things we're going to do. We're going to talk to folks who have made reservations and camped in parks and begin to do some surveying of them to see if we're meeting their needs.
I would think that's a pretty painless way to get feedback from folks, and inexpensive.
Yes.
Thank you.
And Tim, that reading the narrative down below in the bold on that, it also, I was struck by that some of the properties that you purchase are not necessarily parks. And you're talking about developing a measure on a per acre issue. And I was surprised because it says here that you purchase some of those properties to protect and preserve outstanding natural resources or to provide public access to beaches and that type of thing. Well, isn't that kind of a duplication of what OWEB is doing here? I mean, they're doing some of that. I know they are because we get a chance to see their stuff here pretty soon, too. So I guess what I'm concerned about is that necessary? Maybe OWEB should be doing that instead of parks.
Mr. Representative Krupp, OWEB makes their purchases primarily for preservation and restoration of stream habitat and for recovery of fish, whereas our purposes are to make acquisition of property and make it available for the public for recreational needs as well as scenic values and natural needs as well. But when we acquire a property primarily for its natural benefits, we also provide public access to it. We don't restrict. There are areas that need to be protected, obviously, but we acquire property, provide public access, and just because we acquire it doesn't necessarily mean that we do fully develop it for intensively develop it for things like campgrounds and concentrated picnic areas, but put in trails, trailheads, parking lots, so the public can have access to it.
Does OWEB not do that also in terms of allowing public access? I would think they would, wouldn't they?
Mr. Chair, I imagine so, but I don't know. I can't answer that.
Okay. Well, again, it struck me as interesting that because that's, I don't know, I guess I thought of parks as parks, not, buying undeveloped land to let people walk on it, but just for preservation. It didn't strike me to be the intent, I guess, or my understanding what the intent was. Representative Schaffler.
Thank you. And the other way around, could OWEB buy land and improve it, habitat and all that, and then give it to the park system? Is it done the other way around?
I think they can, actually. They can. I think the law allows them to not only purchase land and give it to states, but they can also, or other state agencies, but they can also give it to Trust for Public Lands, Nature Conservancy, which they do. But I don't know how much improvement they do other than maybe stream restoration and that kind of thing that's more specific to Measure 66 direction in terms of their expenditures, which is different than parks.
Mr. Chair, Representative Schaffer, one good example of where our department and OWEB have come together and joined resources was for the acquisition of the Clay Myers Natural Area or Whalen Island in Tillamook County. And so there were both some OWEB funds brought to that project as well as funds from our department, and we manage the site and provide access to the site. And also we protect portions of the site to ensure that it doesn't destroy habitat or that the habitat is maintained or improved. So that is an example.
Okay. Thank you. Please continue.
Performance measure number three is numbers of visitors to Oregon State Parks. What you will note by looking at this is that generally visitation has remained flat. In some years it's grown slightly, but over the past 5 years or so, it has generally been at about the 40 million visitation range. 2004 shows a bit of a spike. We believe that that there may be some factors that affect that. Obviously, last summer we had great weather all summer long, and we had very high visitation early in the summer that kind of kicked up our visitation. There are other factors other than weather. Obviously, one of them is economy and gas prices. Sort of gas prices and visitation have sort of an opposite effect. As gas prices go up, then folks tend to stay closer to home, and so lower cost opportunities for recreation become more attractive, and that could be some of what is factored in here. We think, again, that this is a measure of there's another limiting factor here, perhaps, is one we talked about yesterday. It may be a question of capacity as well, in terms of being able to, you know, to meet the needs. If we were to provide more capacity, whether that be in camping or trails or whatever it is, would visitation increase? Perhaps somewhat, but that could be a limiting factor. As well as population growth is another factor that can impact on the results of this. So we do project an increase in the future, and it's generally the increase is generally reflective of the projected population growth. So that's what this measure is about. We talked yesterday about Oregon in being the fifth highest visitation rate in visitors in the nation, the state park system. I think someone asked, how do we stand in the Northwest? We're really third in the Northwest behind California, Washington, and then us in Oregon.
Tim, that sort of gets back to that begs the question of and I think Senator Nelson, you asked this the other day, was capacity. What is your capacity right now with the parks that you have, you're currently open and managing right now? Yeah, you're number five, and that's wonderful. Glad to see that. But is it to your capacity? Do you have more capacity, or are you at capacity? Where are you at on this?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure what being ranked number five means.
Okay.
You know, I mean, that's just the result of the way the numbers fall out. I don't know whether that's good or bad. It is a measure of how we stand nationally. It depends kind of on what you want to maximize, I guess, or minimize. But with regard to capacity, we have, and then again, it depends on what you're measuring. If you use camping as a measure of capacity, then it's pretty simple for us to measure the parks that we are at or above capacity on, any day of the year. And most of those issues arise out of parks which are located near the population centers. In the northwest corner of the state, along the north coast, where folks have access from the population center of Portland and right around the Willamette Valley. And so they're really where we have capacity. And as I mentioned yesterday, we were talking about acquisition and development needs. We have this plan that's called the Statewide Comprehensive Outdoor Recreation Plan that helps us identify what the needs are by region. We are going to take the results of this plan. We're going to take a look at some of our master plans for that pertain to parks throughout the state. And then we're going to take capacity data, like usage data for day use and overnight, and we're going to try to look at by region where we're not meeting capacity, or where additional resources are really needed to meet the demand as we see it, or as we forecast it. And that will help us shape our our strategy for acquisition and for development. And so we don't really know that. I think we know it. We have the data. We just need to correlate it and evaluate it and then use it to make some decisions. And that's, of course, in fact, our commission has already created a subcommittee to begin to take a look at that data.
So, Senator Bates.
That's the benchmark we need. Not this other stuff. That's the benchmark you need. That's exactly where you need to go to find out what the future holds for you, how much capacity you have in different parts of the states, and where you need, if you need to do land acquisition, that's where you do the land acquisition. That's the benchmark you need.
Mr.
Chair,
can you get a
benchmark we have together for us the next session?
I believe we can, yes. I agree with you.
That would really make sense.
I agree with you.
Well, I like the sound of that, Senator. I think it seems to make sense to most of us in the room.
We're trying to get to 50 days.
When do you think you can have that done?
Mr. Chair, our commission hopes to work through that and have something by this fall. That's what their goal is. At least have the plan and developed by this fall.
We'd be very interested in and please pass that along to the commission. That we think this is a very important measure, and it would be very appropriate if they could. Yes, Susan.
The subcommittee can direct the agency to develop that performance measure as a part of this process before we adopt the budget, so they can have the measure in place, and you can add that as one of their key performance measures.
And is that something that would happen during
work session?
Okay. Well, commissioner, members, keep that in mind, that if we think this is a good thing, good direction to go in, that we have the option as a committee asking them to do that, which would be very helpful, I would think, in the next session when we come back and review the performance measures. Then it's in place, and we can see how well we've done or not.
Mr. Chair, could we also in that process take a look at some performance measures which we might want to eliminate? Most agencies, even much bigger agencies, have seven or eight key performance measures, and that's what we look at.
And Senator, I think moving on to performance measure number four, and yes, might be one of those that we could eliminate.
this did give me
yes, Representative Dingfelder. I'm sorry. Before we go further,
yeah, and it relates to this because I guess, and I'm fairly new to this process, and I know that it would be interesting for me to talk about how we link the performance measures, because what Senator Bates is talking about, projecting future capacity, I would think is going to be highly linked to a number of these other performance measures, like, you know, number of new sites and access that you need. I mean, I guess it gets back to that question, how do we know how much you need for acquisition or how many new access sites we need unless we're projecting the future capacity? And I don't know if you talk about how you link the performance measures and how they're interconnected.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dingfelder,
And I'm looking at 10 and 11 thinking, well, that's got to be linked to future capacity.
I would say that some of our performance measures were developed. Again, we tried to link each of them to at least one of our strategies in our Target 2014. And when they were developed, we hadn't necessarily had some of the plans and documents in place that will help us put some of those numbers in there. For instance, the trails plan and the ocean shore management plan address miles of trail, not necessarily miles of trail, but locations and those kinds of things. And the ocean shore management plan talks about beach accesses, how many, where should they be. And that is beginning to come together. We've completed both of those plans now. But, you know, to get to the question of capacity and needs and are the plans driving decisions to meet those needs, I appreciate the conversation, and that will help us to improve these. I appreciate the guidance. I'm being sincere about that, too. So.
Outstanding. And one last thing before we move on to number four is, in talking about capacity and the numbers of visitors, what do you do to really attract people in? I know you've got your reservations Northwest. You have your 800 number. You have some additional book reservations, and you've got a budget for that, and quite a few and phone operators, which is like 24 and a half FTE. What else are you doing? Are you doing any real advertising that seems to work for you?
Chairman Krupp, we do some advertising. It's pretty targeted because it's generally to user groups that you would expect to use parks. We also participate in programs with the Oregon tourism folks. We have a program called Northwest Ambassadors Program that we do with Idaho and Washington. We have volunteers who are hosts and camp and volunteers in our camps in our parks during the summer, who spend their winter in Arizona and New Mexico, who go to various events down there and they promote Oregon, Washington, and Idaho state parks sort of collectively. We also have local staff who participate in like county fairs. Sportsman shows. We also have a display that we do at the state fair where we come in contact with a lot of folks. And obviously the lottery on their own promotional efforts use state parks and advertise the fact that lottery dollars do go to state parks. So we have recently been getting an awful lot of publicity through the lottery. So those are some of the things that we do.
In talking about performance measures, do you think that would be something that you could quantify or measure or would be reasonable? What kind of results are you getting from your advertising efforts as a whole, whether it's reservations Northwest or what kind of...
The Representative Krupp, there may be some merit to that. I'll have to give it some thought and we'll do that. Is there a good way to measure it and can we measure it and really determine what the effect is? Well, we certainly take a look at that.
Okay, great. All right, let's move on. Thanks.
Sure, sure.
Yes, yes.
Representative Dinkle. It relates to your question.
Okay.
And many of us, some of us around this very dais, voted for tax increase last session that was the 1% fee for tourism tax, basically. Right. Do you get to use any of that money, or is any of that money being used to promote parks? Do you know?
Representative Krupp, Chairman Krupp, Representative Dingfelder, no, we don't get that money back. It goes to tourism, and tourism in sort of a broader sense helps to promote Oregon State Parks, but we don't have any sort of direct link to that.
And my question wasn't that you're getting it directly, but do you know if the folks who are, the tourism folks who are getting that, do you work with them to use some of that funds to promote parks since it's such a huge draw for tourism in the state?
Mr. Chair, Representative Dingfelder, I'll have to check that. I do know that we work with the tourism folks in programs to locally in local communities to help promote tourism, and as a part of that, part of our participation with chambers of commerce and local tourism groups, advertising state parks in that local community is a part of that effort. But I'll have to investigate a little further to answer much broader than that.
Very good. Okay, performance measure number four.
Mr. Chair, number four is a favorite performance measure of mine. It's one of those things that we can measure. What this measure was intended to do was to measure our effectiveness in our implementing our conservation measures in the park, in reducing our use of, or being more efficient in our use of energy. And, we looked at measuring water usage and amount of sewage treated and, dumpsters hauled and all those kinds of things, which really get to operating costs in a park system.
Yeah.
This links what we do in terms of upgrading facilities with operating costs as well. So it turned out that energy usage was one of those things that we could measure. But it also has an impact. It's also impacted by water usage because you got to pump the water, you got to treat the water, you got to, run it through the sewage treatment system, and so forth. And so, the intent of this measure was to do just that, just to see if we're making any progress with regard to that. Now, if this is a measure that, you know, that doesn't serve value to you, that doesn't mean that we couldn't keep it as a measure that, that
precisely.
We could use it as well.
Precisely. Okay. I'm sure we'll be talking with you about this one further.
Let's move on to measure number five. Item measure number five is total investment in preserving Oregon's cultural resources through OPRD grants. This measure really looks at the department's role in helping to promote historic preservation statewide, most particularly through its grant programs. And some of the performance issues here are the same sorts of performance issues we had in Measure 1 about being able to, you know, get the dollars out the door and account for, although, you know, we are doing much better here than we were in the other program. In 2003, you'll notice a major spike in the funds that went out the door, and that's because there was an increase in federal funds provided that year that hadn't been projected or and hadn't been expected, and so that's what that is about. The sort of the projection of not much change in performance over the next 3 years is a reflection of just anticipated continued flat funding, primarily from the federal side, which is my guess is it will be flat or even reduced. Measure number six, number of properties participating in special assessment of historic properties. This is what I was talking to earlier. As you can see, that sort of this target begins to drop off, as does participation. Again, participation in this program has been has been diminished, I guess, because the primary benefit was the freeze on property taxes, which is not necessarily an incentive any longer with property taxes generally frozen anyway. So what we have introduced in several previous sessions was, or not introduced, I guess we had, the department has had discussions with the governor's office about introducing a measure that would provide tax credits for historic preservation, but with the concern, the impact on, you know, state's revenue as a whole and so forth, those measures haven't been advanced any further. That's, again, our Heritage Conservation Division of our department has two general responsibilities. This one is sort of internal to the department and helping us take care of the historic properties that we have, but it's also to promote historic preservation in the communities as well, and that's done primarily through grants. So that's really why this measure is here. Measure number seven is acres of land added to the state park system using prioritized criteria. I'll point out the prioritized criteria point first. As I mentioned yesterday, a lot of our acquisition is opportunistic. When somebody comes to us and says, we have a piece of property, or would you look at this property and see if you'd like to have it, we have a set of criteria that we use to evaluate that property to determine, you know, if we had this property, what need would it meet, how much development, if any, would it require, what investment would it take, how much would it cost to operate and maintain, is it located reasonably close to another park unit where we could manage it from another park unit. All those kinds of considerations are made as we prioritize them. So that's what the prioritized criteria idea is there. The numbers and the target are really an estimate. Until the current biennium, our acquisition budget was $4 million. From 1901 to up to 2003, it was $4 million. And so what we were trying to do here was is make an estimate of the number of acres of property we could buy, knowing that the number that we could buy would be dependent on what the price was at the time we wanted to buy it. And so that's how the targets were arrived at. The anomaly, if you will, in 2004 is really the acquisition of the Harris Canyon property up in Washington County. It shows we didn't meet that goal. It doesn't mean that we haven't acquired the property. All the deals were in place to acquire that property, but getting the transaction completed with all the folks that have been involved in this, primarily as Longview Fiber, Department of Forestry, and ourselves, and getting all those parcels, the transactions done, it included trades and exchanges for a whole host of properties. It's all going to happen, but it didn't happen in 2004. It should happen in the next few months here anyway.
And Tim, why are you looking at 2005 at 500 acres, which is twice as much as 06, 07, or the previous years from 2000 and on? Are you anticipating another large acquisition?
Mr. Chair, potentially we are looking at a couple of larger acquisitions that would bring us to that 500 acre.
Okay. Yes, Senator.
Mr. Chair, thank you. It seemed to me, just looking at this, thinking about that, this is a number's going to bounce a lot from year to year, and it should. As property becomes available or not becomes available, it's not going to be a steady line, so I'm not sure it's a good performance measure for you, because it's going to bounce all over the place, and it should. I would be suspicious if you were buying the same amount of acreage every year if you weren't being diligent. You're just buying to buy. Okay, so I expect this kind of fluctuation. Secondly, it goes back to your earlier comment about where a capacity is, where you need to buy, if at all, and how much. And so, I debate whether this is kind of something that's useful to us. One performance measure says this is where our capacity needs to be increased, and this is how we're going about doing it. It might be more meaningful than this kind of data. Okay? Thank you.
Yes, Mr. Dinko.
Well, I'm looking at this sort of, I think, going the same place as Senator was just mentioned. I guess thinking about a performance standard or performance measure that would be more valuable. And yesterday you talked, you gave us two numbers, and I'm trying to reconcile and figure out how we could apply this. You talked about user per acre. And I think I wrote down that we were eighth in the nation on that. And then you talked about we were second in visitors per acre. I'm trying to distinguish between those two. So I'm thinking I'm looking through and seeing we don't have any performance measures that reflect that. And I'm sort of thinking about, again, the capacity. I mean, I think about for my city of Portland, we know that there are certain areas of the city that are underserved. And that part of our performance measures is to see, are we increasing parks? Like, for instance, my district is very much underserved in parks. And part of our goal is looking at, users, the available parks per acre of citizens in Portland, thinking about that statewide. And it might be maybe by region. I'm just curious why we don't have performance measures that look at, are we serving, the greatest need for Oregonians? And I realize that visitors are people from outside of Oregon as well, and maybe that's a tough performance measure. But also trying to think about parks that are overused. And, do we want to look at a region-by-region performance measure, or are we measuring the system as a whole? And I'm not I don't have a park planning background, so I don't know the answer. I'm just raising this as a question.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dingfelder, first of all, I misspoke yesterday when I said eighth in terms of visitors per acre. Second in the nation in visitors per acre is the correct term. And we are second in that I believe our visitors per acre is about 432 visitors per acre in our system. We are second behind Rhode Island, who is number one. Again, that's one of those measures that's information. I'm not necessarily sure what it tells you. The average nationally is about 112 visitors per acre. The question would be, is that what we're trying to maximize or what are we trying to minimize? But I do understand your concern about looking at capacity and hopefully, as I mentioned, as we look at sort of being more strategic about our acquisition program, that obviously capacity and need will be a driver in that, and then that might be a better correlation than the acres of land added to the system. I understand.
Representative Schaffler.
Thanks. If we... you said the average was about 39 to 40 million a year visitors, but now last year was at 44 million. Would that, if that jump stayed the same, like if it's 45 million this year, would we still be second per acre, or would we be first then?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Schaffer, Rhode Island is so far ahead of us or behind us, I'm not sure which, that we'd probably still be second.
Okay.
That would be my guess.
And I have...
Yes.
is it legal, would it be legal saying if this 2014 for whatever reason didn't get renewed, for us to use, if they met their constitutional goals, to use OWEB money to add capacity to the parks? I'm probably stepping on a whole bunch of toes with that question, but if they met their constitutional goals to restore salmon habitat, could we, or would you be interested in, if that 2014 didn't pass, using that money to add capacity in the park system? Because you could kill two birds with one stone, assuming the worst case scenario.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Schaffer, I don't know the answer to that question. I would say that philosophically, from the standpoint where OWEB and Parks Department can join forces and there's a greater benefit there, we would certainly be willing to look at how that might benefit. But that's more of a policy question. I think that we better ask the governor's office than mine for that.
And Mr. Chair, I'm fascinated with the subject matter, but I'm going to ask controversial questions just so I can stay awake in the middle of the
night. We appreciate that. All right, Representative Krieger.
Chair. Washington, up New Park, we sent Bud Stewart. And that's forest land, that's ag land, and private land. Do you have to get a land use change to change that to recreation of some type? And if that was in private ownership, could you ever get that land changed? In other words, I doubt that a farmer, a rancher, or a forest owner could turn around. I can't see why we're allowing the state to do it if a private individual can't do it.
Mr. Chair, Representative Krieger, what brought this 1,700 acres or so together in Washington County was a result of an exchange of a whole bunch of parcels that we had owned from up and down the Sunset and the Wilson River Highway that had come to our department through ODOT when we were a part of ODOT. Most of it was not in park use. It was just reserved parcels out there. The bulk of the acreage came from combining those things and an exchange made between forestry and Longview Fiber. A large portion of the ground right in the park was owned by Longview Fiber and had all been logged and was in reproductive growth at the time. Still is. There were, I believe, two private parcels that were purchased on that to comprise that park property. And I believe they were also in, I think the zoning was EFU on all of those. Is that correct?
Correct. Yes. I guess one point, that's still right, with the Parks and Recreation Department. I think it's your question about whether a private party could do that. In most of the
Sorry, Mr. Chair, we can't pick your voice up on the recording system. So.
Go ahead and come on up, Dave. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I'm Dave Wright, Assistant Director for Operations at State Parks. But most of the forest zones, Representative Krieger, are conditional. A park is permitted as a conditional use. In the case of the Washington County Park, we went through a master planning process and worked through the county to have that property rezoned basically to park and recreation use. Whether or not a private party could do the same thing, there probably aren't many private parties that would want to build a state park or a park in a forest zone because it's not a moneymaker. The land is much more valuable from an economic sense for forest use than for a public park.
Well, now that's interesting that you would say that, because one of the arguments that's made by certain environmental organizations is that it's appropriate to lock up our forests because there is this higher value ultimately in recreation. So, thank you for making my argument.
Representative
Schaffer, I'm sorry, I couldn't resist.
That's okay, and it gets right to what I'm going to ask, and I'm not suggesting that we would go backwards in time and do this, but if we took all the parkland right now that's existing now and put that there, and any future acquisition of forest land, could we use that to log off for revenue for the state? If it was, you know, in a sustainable, safe, economic way, and it's, if someone wanted to contribute land to the state park system, not anything that's existing, because I certainly don't want everybody to wake up that bad, in the future, just because there's a lot of sensitivity to the park system or the state acquiring land, taking it out of production, well, couldn't we acquire land and use it for some kind of park system and still use it for beneficial use? I mean, is that possible? Has anybody thought about all that?
Representative Shoffler, we have a forest management program within the department, and while we don't manage our parklands to generate revenue, one of the byproducts of doing forest health work is revenue. And I think this biennium we project to bring in about $750,000 from our forest management program.
Just so I can clarify myself, I'm not talking about just forest health. I'm talking about logging timber for milling for lumber. That's what I'm talking about.
Sure. And I think, you know, that's doable, and that's really a philosophical question of whether or not you want your state parks to be clear cuts.
And may I clarify, Mr. Chair? I'm not talking about existing state parks. I'm talking about anything acquired in the future to be used in a more flexible way. Not anything existing. I want to be real clear here. I'm not talking about clear-cutting existing state parks. I'm going to emphasize that repeatedly. I'm talking about future acquisition. That's what I'm asking.
Representative Shuffler, I'm sure that is a doable thing. It's really a question of whether or not the state would want to get
right.
into, because forest land is expensive, especially with timber values now. And it takes quite a while for that to replenish itself so that you could, for the next
right.
cutting.
Thank you.
Yeah, didn't we, Tim, pass a bill last session that in the case of fire, you had to do a forest plan and utilize that within 6 months or something?
Representative Krueger, that's correct. There was a bill passed that requires all state agencies that manage forest land to do a plan for a salvage during the case of a wildfire so that it isn't just left. Because after a fire, that timber fairly quickly deteriorates. So the sooner you can get to it, the more you can salvage it.
I'd also like to know if you could figure out for us the total acres of forest land that you have in your system, the board feet, its growth rate, and what's happening, because that varies a lot on the coast compared to the east side. One other thing I need to know is, and you could maybe you could start with the, I know you have some donations, but of your major purchases, what are you paying per acre on forest land, ag land, private land that had other, I want to compare what you're paying for and what you're valuing it as. It would have is turning it into parks compared to if you're going to sell that same land to remain in forestry, to remain in agriculture.
Representative Krueger, it's difficult because it's so much of that timber volume depends on, you know, how it's been stocked, the size of how old it is, the different species that it may be. Right now, believe it or not, red alder is a pretty high commodity. We have, when we did our exchange, and the exchange for the Washington County Park included a total of about 9,000 acres of property for us to get about 1,800 acres in a state park. And we gave up about 790 acres of state park land that hadn't been harvested for, you know, since we've owned it, other than some periodic thinnings or hazard tree removals. And the value of our land versus the Longview Fiber, we were about twice as high based on the crews of the timber. Now, because our trees were bigger, they hadn't been cut, and the stuff we were getting was, some of it had been cut, it was a reprod, some of it was maybe 30, 40 years old, but none of it was the size of the timber on the property that we're giving up that is actually about state forest land, so it's a three-way exchange going to state forestry. And but it's, you know, we're across the board. When we acquire timberland, we have it cruised by an independent timber cruiser. So we're paying the value at that date of what, you know, someone would pay for those trees if it was a private party.
You pay more than what the appraisal is?
We have tried very hard not to, but when you don't condemn for property, it's, you know, sometimes you have to negotiate a little bit, and it depends on whether or not you can justify that. There is kind of that smell test that you have to put to any acquisition you do, and our commission would not approve it if it didn't smell right to them.
Thank you. I think we're to number eight. Performance measure number eight is to look, it was intended to look at how we are implementing our interpretive program. The goals are based on the numbers of the goals are based on the, what we have developed as a strategic plan for interpretation. Our strategic plan establishes five levels of service. And the lowest level of service might be for each park property we have. The lowest level of service might be nothing or a sign, all the way up to our highest level of service, which might be a museum or a visitor center with full-time staffing. And we're obviously, most of our properties are on the lower end of that spectrum, but there's sort of a gradation of the services that we provided from one to five. We've outlined and identified all of those in our strategic plan. This is just a measure of how we are progressing at establishing those services at the various numbers of parks. Item number nine is total investment grants awarded for construction and improvements on state system of trails and waterways. This, again, is a measure of the dollars that are invested in local communities for upgrading trails and access to waterways. Again, the projects which are selected and funded through this grant program are supported by our trails plan and from our statewide outdoor recreation plan. Again, a lot of this is federal money, so there's some federal process involved here. I would say that as we look at how we might streamline performance measure number one, that sort of critical look will be applied to all our grant programs, and this being one of them. Item number 10 is to look at the number of new beach and river access sites added by the state park system. This is derived, again, from our Target 2014 and from our trails and comprehensive outdoor recreation plan that says access to the beaches and the ocean shore and access to waterways are very high priorities for recreationists. And so this was a way of measuring it. This measure doesn't mean much to you all. I would be more than happy to discuss how we might change it or whether it's of value or not. It's difficult to measure, and it's not necessarily difficult to measure, but I'm not sure how valuable it is in terms of decisions.
Representative Schaffer, then Representative Krieger.
Thank you. Access sites, that mean to like a river, for example, that means a boat access? Or just access to the front of waterfront?
Chairman Krupp, Representative Schaffer, it could be either. It could be a boat launch site, or it could be perhaps a piece of property that we own along the Willamette Greenway that right now, for whatever reason, you can't get to and the public can't use it. It could be either.
Jim Krieger?
Mr. Chair, Sisters Rock, right below my house on the road. You've had that for 2 years, give or take. Still got a gate across. Everybody has to walk in. When are you going to actually invest some of these investment dollars to getting a road down? I think that would be the main thing the public would want as far as facilities at the bottom, you know, restrooms and that, I understand. Is there any work planned for that piece in progress?
Representative Krupp, Chairman Krupp, Representative Krieger, yes, there is. And we've been working with ODOT on trying to figure out how we can get good access onto that site. That's kind of been the long pole in the tent here. But our intent is to get it opened up so that at least you can get around off the highway and park, and then folks can have access down to the water from there.
That's on the state highway?
Yeah, right off the state highway 101, right below my house almost.
Do you have a time frame when you think you can get that accomplished with ODOT?
Representative Krupp, let me check. We're working that locally in the region there, and I'll check and see what sort of the time frame.
If you could come back, report back to the committee when we go to round two.
Sure.
with some idea,
I haven't paid to get it out of the way. Okay.
Yes, blow my head.
Yeah. For the record, potential conflict of interest here. But,
not that he's losing his position as chair of this committee.
I do have a question about sites, and frankly, I agree with you. I think that's probably a performance measure that we don't necessarily need to know as a key performance measure. Let's put it that way. But I am curious, though. I mean, you do, and thank you, by the way, for giving us the average cost per site, because it was a question that we had. But define site. You're talking about Define it. What is it exactly?
Sure, Chairman Krupp, it could be anything from, you know, sort of a road end access to the beach or to a trail, or a larger parcel which would provide, you know, other services or other facilities more than just access to a beach or to the river. An example in this that we used here was the acquisition of Sunset Beach in Clatsop County. That's about a 120-acre parcel, I believe, that fronts, that's right there on the Clatsop Plain, will be the terminus of the Port to Sea Trail. So it provides access to the beach, but it also has some trail usage and some, you know, will have minor day use as well. So, I mean, it can kind of be a full range. We'd count Sunset Beach Sisters Rock as a beach access that public beach access that wasn't in public use before.
All right, great. And by the way, can you give us a comparison of what it? I don't know if it's valuable or not, but I wrote it down when I looked at this earlier. It was, how do you compare in cost per site with other states? If you can see if there's any information to that regard, and I know that may be pretty subjective because every state has their driving factors when it comes to acquisition and developing. Number 11
is miles of new trails added to state park system, and this measure is really related to properties on which we manage, owner or manage, not on by other providers. Really, this is sort of a measure of, well, one of the greatest recreational needs identified nationally and certainly in Oregon is access to trails, and hiking, walking is one of the number one activities for outdoor recreation. And so this is a measure of how we might meet that. We have master plans for various parks which identify trails, trail systems that should be built as part of those parks. And we also use our trails plan to do that. We don't. Many of our parks that are currently existing, many of our smaller parcel parks don't provide opportunities for much in terms of a lengthy trail, like some of the parks along the coast. But in other places like Smith Rock, the Cove, Palisades, Silver Falls, there are opportunities to expand trails, and so that's. That was intended to help us drive toward meeting that need for trails.
Okay. Yes, sir.
I'm going to try to tie number 9, number 11 together here just for a moment, Tim. Because these are two areas I think I've had some personal experience in, and one was the Bear Creek Greenway between Ashland Metz, and the other one was the Jacksonville Woodlands Trail. Both heavily used in an urban area, really. Your department was excellent to work with. You know, the work is being done now. You know, it was matched grant money. Your department helped drive that for us and was greatly appreciated. Reading this, I can't tell. You guys did a great job. Okay? I mean, you know, let's give a kudo here where it deserves. And I'd like to have you think about how you look at the trail system, not just inside state parks, but the things you've done in the urban areas that have really made a difference for people living in those areas, where there really was a need. You know, you're not just building trails out in the wilderness used by a few people on the weekends. These are trails used every single day in our area, and I'm sure you're probably doing across the state, which we're not aware of it. Other representatives probably and senators have probably the same experience that I do. See if you can capture that, because these are hard for me to look at and make any sense of. And my personal experience is you've done a great job. Now let's true across the state, but thanks.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair? Yes, Dr. Shoffler.
Yeah, I thank you. I've done a bunch of backpacking myself, and we still like to go out and gorge and walk up the trails. And it just seems, how much is it, a mile? And it just doesn't seem like 3 miles of trails and 95,000 acres is that much. I don't know. It's how much is it in a mile? And do you have crews out there maintaining trails? I know the National Park System will be out in the bush for a day or two or three, and we'll run across 20 young people with all their gear clanking down the trail. Do you do that too?
Mr. Chair, Representative Shoffler, to answer the last question first, yes, we do. We use crews from the Oregon Youth Conservation Corps, which are generally organized, you know, locally to a park someplace. We use crews from the Northwest Youth Corps, which is a program out of Eugene. We also use corrections crews on trails. We bring in volunteers to do work on trails, like equestrian groups. We'll do trail work, as do Boy Scouts and others, as well as staff. And in some cases, like Smith Rock, for instance, we've done a lot of trail improvement there. We actually hired a contractor to do that work because it was much of the work because it was in very difficult terrain. But yes, we do we do use youth crews and other crews to do that. To your first question, obviously, if you're building a trail up the side of Smith Rock or you're building a trail around Whalen Island, there's a difference in cost, but you know, it ranges probably in the range of $36,000 to $50,000, depending on the terrain and what you put into the, you know, what the trail design is and what its use is for, a mile. And that's a very rough estimate.
And Tim, do you pay any of those groups who come in and do that work? Could you pay them a nominal fee? You pay minimum wage? Not at all? Volunteer? How does that work?
Mr. Chair, we do. We contract with crews through the Oregon Youth Conservation Corps, and we pay them to provide crews. We contract for that's where our Northwest Youth Corps crews come from as well. But we also get a lot of volunteer work that folks will do in exchange for an overnight in the park, or you know, or we'll do just out of the sort of the philanthropic idea of helping helping in a park.
All right, let's move on.
Number 12 is percent of alternative camping available for total campsites. This was based on a commission goal, general goal of trying to have about 10% of our total overnight capacity in alternative camping forms, and that translates roughly to yurts and cabins, primarily in our system. So this is a measure of how we're trying to get to that. We invest about $250,000 each biennium in installation addition of yurts and cabins in our system, you know, we're making quite a bit of progress, and we'll continue to do that. Our next major slug of cabins will go in at Harris Canyon State Park. So it's programmed in each year, and this was just a goal to help us keep on track to accomplish that goal.
Yes.
Will those cabins be like the ones down at Cove Palisades there? Those are nice cabins.
Mr. Chair, Representative Schaffer, the ones that are going in at Harris Canyon are the more, I think we have a combination of sort of the deluxe cabins, which are more like the ones at Cove Palisades, and sort of what we call overnight sleeper cabins or overnight cabins, which don't have all the amenities. I think, I'm not certain on this, I think there's a total of 15 to 20 that will go in two different locations at Harris Canyon in the plan. I would just point out that one of the questions that came up was, you know, what drives this and what is the occupancy? The yurts and cabins in our system are extremely popular. We do these by reservation. You've got to get on the line 9 months in advance in order to get on the list. We have 86% occupancy in our yurts and cabins during the summertime, and that's across our whole system. There's a huge amount of times during the summer that we're at 100% occupancy, certainly during weekends and holidays. And in the winter time, October through April, about 45% occupancy across the system. So that's really pretty high. And again, 100% occupancy on quite a few weekends at places as well. So they are tremendously popular. And it provides a good opportunity for folks to go camping without having to invest in all the paraphernalia that you need to take along with you and then dry out when you get home.
May I ask a question?
Absolutely, Senator.
What do you charge for those cabins and yurts?
Mr. Chair, Senator Bates, our cabins, our yurts are $27, I believe, a night, and our yurts are... Our yurts are $27 a night. Our cabins, sleeper cabins, are generally, I think, $35 a night. And then the deluxe cabins, I believe, are $65 a night.
follow-up question. Do you have any discussion with the local hotel motel owners about competition from those?
Mr. Chair, Senator Bates, not recently. We have done some comparisons about how our rates are with in the local area, but we really haven't had any real issues about with local providers about competition. And we're really not trying to compete. We're trying to complement, if you will.
I understand. I guess we just wanted to get that out.
Okay, thanks. Item number 13 is a measure of a reduction in facilities backlog. And one of the questions that was asked was, and if we could extend this chart out to 2014, this is kind of a difficult chart to read, so we updated this chart that we gave you yesterday, because the question was asked yesterday, had we added the additional $6 million into it? And so this is the last page of what's attached to your handout there. And this not only reflects the $6 million increase, moving the program from $15 to $21 million, but it also reflects Representative Krupp, your
I see that.
Question.
Thank you.
And actually, that had been calculated in there, but it really hadn't been shown. So
I see. Okay.
It does that. So that takes us to a backlog of about $14.7 million out in the 2013-2015 biennium. One of the constraints that we have, in reducing the backlog is the ability to manage the work. And so one of the things you'll see in our budget package would be a request for making full-time people, or making permanent for a while at least, some positions to help us in managing the backlog in our engineering department, as well as contract staff to help us do that. I just would like to point out that I was hired in 1998 with primarily responsibility of figuring out how to build this backlog down, and I was in a state of woe for quite a while here as we analyzed what the situation was and how we might go about doing it. But frankly, I'm very hopeful now that we're well on the way to getting the backlog in our system down to a manageable level, and I think we're doing a good job of it. I think the products that we're seeing in the field are reflective of attention to detail and quality work, and I think it's helping position our system for the future and erasing a whole lot of burden that had been carried by the department for some time.
Tim, you just said something that piqued an interest to me. You do have a policy package. I'm just trying to remember. You have a policy package for engineering positions?
Representative Krupp, that's correct. And we have some positions which have been carried as limited duration positions. And basically, there's a project manager, folks who manage and oversee contracts and contract work that we were moving to make them, at the recommendation of Department of Administrative Services, moving to make them permanent as opposed to limited duration.
Why wouldn't you want to take a look at just contracting out the engineering work, much as ODOT is doing with their design build characteristics with $2.4 billion worth of roads and bridges we're going to do, rather than create more permanent government employees?
Representative Krupp, I understand your question, and you gave me fair warning on this one. I met with you.
I did, didn't I?
But yesterday I pointed out about 240 contracts that we have going in this biennium. We got, I don't want to try to make comparisons between us and ODOT, except from the standpoint that, if they take a project that's $20 million project, that's a project, whereas we take $20 million and that's 60 or 70 projects. And we do contract most all of the engineering work, the design work, the construction work, and a lot of the construction inspection work out to private contractors. But we still need somebody to manage the contract, to represent the state in carrying out the work, and that's primarily what these folks do.
Okay. I'm not sure I agree with you, but it may be a matter of semantics, ultimately. Very good, and thank you for including the updated graph, by the way. I really do appreciate that. And we have one last performance measure, number 14, correct, or are we already there? I'm lost.
Mr. Chair, we opened with a discussion about this one, and Senator Bates suggested we eliminate it, and we would agree with that.
Thank you.
If you all agree to that, then that concludes my presentation.
Thank you.
Well, and I read your rationale for wanting to include that there, and it, there is some value, obviously, in reminding the legislature and ensuing legislators, whoever would sit on this committee and be looking at your budget in 2 years or 4 years from now, 5, 6 years from now, that this issue is relevant to your decision-making and to the decisions that we make in terms of how we move forward with your agency. If Measure 66 goes away, your world has to change pretty dramatically. And so it would be wise, I would think, and I think you're already headed in this direction because it seems to be what you've said on numerous occasions, is that you are intending to plan to move to at least have a scenario in place where you can manage without Measure 66 funds, which will have an incredible impact on your operation. Representative Krieger, you have a comment.
Yeah, you were talking about acquisition funds. Can they be used for doing this backlog that you were talking about of maintenance and reconstruction?
Mr. Chair, Representative Krieger, I don't believe so. We got a portion of our budget in specifically dedicated to acquisition back when Measure 66 first came. And there were primarily one, two, three elements to that. One was a package for acquisition. One was for a package for local grants. And one was for a significant investment in facilities. And so this is a little fuzzy in my mind because I wasn't following all this at the time, but I think the intention at the time was that be specifically for the purposes of acquisition and not for development or not for renovation.
No, I would totally disagree with you. Measure 66 was sold to us, in my opinion, as a fix for the problem with parks. Acquisition was secondary. I go back and look at the arguments in the
check.
Ballot statement.
Like what
would the ballot
check.
Measure say?
And then also, my point would be that if you're going to run out of Measure 66 money, that your plan should say that when you're running out of money, all of that backlog should be done. And if you've got enough money in there to do all this acquisition, I think it would be better put back into the backlog. And then so that you know, you're going to still be buying property. But if that's possible, I'd like to see that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Krieger, I understand. Chairman Krupp, the ballot measure did allow acquisition as a part. But what I was referring to was when we put our budget together, the first time we had Measure 66 money, there were several components of that budget, and one was specifically directed toward acquisition, and one was for facility investment. So, I mean, that was the point that I was trying to make.
Well, yes, Susan.
Members of the committee, I think one of the things that we need to keep in mind while we're putting this budget together is that there are some limitations on what the legislature can do in directing the department and where they put their resources. We as a legislature are walking a fine line imposing expenditure limitation on Measure 66 dollars with the constitutional provision that allows the agency to do whatever they want with them without legislative oversight. And it's very clear in the Constitution that there be some separation there. Given that, though, the agency can put more money into the facility backlog if that's where they think that it's important. But they're trying to create a balance. Just as the people who voted for Measure 66, or at least the way it was written, wanted to create a balance by identifying all the different areas that they could use those funds in. So there's some, you know, we just need to be careful about what we direct the department to do when we're establishing their expenditure limitations.
Senator Biggs.
I think your point is well taken. This is not general fund money, so we don't have direct control over it, and we understand that. And the Parks Department understands that too, I'm sure. I am actually most concerned about your knowledge of your capacity and where that capacity is and where those needs need to change and where they might change in 5, 10, or 15 years. And you are trying to address that now with your study, which I hope you'll get done when we plan it. But I would like to see it done 5 years ago, and you probably would too. So first question is, where's your capacity needs? Do you need to increase them anywhere, and if so, where and how? And that drives your acquisition question. It also drives your maintenance efforts too. I would just gently point out that, as you well know, you could be back in front of a committee like this someday asking for general fund money. Just, it's a way I don't have any direct control over you, okay? And I'm not threatening you. But maybe we can work out something that everybody's happy with.
Senator Bates, I think you're reading all of our minds Susie, I appreciate your comments. Yes, we don't have great control, but it would be very prudent for the department today to be putting money away for that eventuality. If you are allowed to, and I would hope that Measure 66 allows you the latitude to build some reserve.
Mr. Chair, I'd point out, too, that the budget is made up of other sources of funds, and you
True.
Can direct those sources. You have much more latitude with that. That would force the agency, then, to backfill with Measure 66 monies in other areas. So you do have some ability to make some, to provide some direction here.
Thank you, and I appreciate that reminder. It's just I think it's important that you plan well for the future, because if Measure 66 is not renewed and you have to come back here and ask for general fund money,
and you still have a backlog.
And you still have a backlog, and you've acquired a lot of new properties, and you don't have a lot of money in reserve for facilities maintenance, you're going to have a big problem. There's no other way to say it, and I would hate to see a wonderful park system go into disrepair, because we're just not going to have hardly any money for you. And so please understand our concern is for the longevity, which I believe is your concern too. It's just, please relay that to the commission that, this committee anyway wants you to be very judicious in your planning for the future, because you're kind of at that break point, it seems to me, being 6, 7, 8 years out from where these decisions have to be thought through very carefully. Representative Soft.
Actually, it's been, you guys have covered it all.
Okay.
Unbelievable.
Anything else for the good of the order? If not, you've been very good. We appreciate your indulgence with all of our questions and machinations. And with that, my friends, and thank you, Senator Shields.
Thank you for letting me listen in.
It's great to have you here today, and we are adjourned.